Welcome back to Discuss Foundation episode 5. My name is Nick and this is my co-host Brian, as always. This is going to be breaking down the episode Upon Awakening from Foundation episode 5. Before we jump into our thoughts in the episode, just to give an overview of kind of what the podcast is going to be, it is we're going to be go ahead and give our general feelings on the episode as far as how we think it did, how we felt about it, and where we think it ranks with the other episodes. After that, we're going to go and do a recap, kind of scene-by-scene breakdown of the episode and kind of our feelings about it more specifically. And then we'll go ahead and give our predictions for where we think the episode's going to go after. Before we do that, guys, we did launch. You guys might be listening on these platforms, but we did launch as an audio podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, and Google Play. So if that's more convenient for you guys to listen to, definitely do that. We are also in video format on Twitch, where we stream live every Friday at 6:30 p.m. Eastern Time, as well as YouTube, where we post it generally either Friday or Saturday as well. So it is in those video formats as well, so make sure to check that out. And then lastly, before I kick it over to Brian for his feelings, we do a disclaimer for the book readers, which is me and Brian have not read Isaac Asimov's seminal Foundation series, so we really don't know how any of this relates to the books at all. We're not very versed in that world at all. We're just coming from the perspective of two guys that stumbled across the show that really like sci-fi and really like the show and the cast and everything and are kind of enjoying it that way. So we're coming from that perspective. If you guys are looking to dig your teeth into something a little more book fan driven and a little more kind of narrative driven based on the comparison of the books, there are some other podcasts. I think Apple has an official podcast as well.
Yes, they do.
There's other podcasts out there as well that kind of tackle that subject matter. This is more for kind of just the TV show fans and those kind of speculation. But with all that out of the way, what were your overall feelings on episode 5, Upon Awakening?
I wasn't a fan of the episode. Like, at first, I thought it was really unique because you get to see the history of Gail and how she came up to stuff. But, like, just this episode, it felt lacking. It felt Gail's backstory just seemed kind of forced, and I don't know, it just didn't hit for me.
Yeah, I agree. I think this is probably my least favorite episode of the season, which is not saying
I got scared there for a second. I was like,
no, I think we agree. This is probably my least favorite episode of the season. This is definitely my least favorite episode of the season, but to be fair, that's not saying much because I've really liked the other four. So it's not that this was necessarily like a bad episode per se, but it was not up to par with the other ones as well. And a lot of my issues were narrative ones. And I think we probably agree on that too, where you were saying that the stuff felt forced and everything too. A lot of it kind of was narrative problems to me. Was that your feeling as well?
Yeah, that was my feeling. And it felt like the time jumps and like the cutbacks just kind of, they cut back on like really weird angles and really weird parts of it, mm-hmm. that it felt like it was a little skewed a little bit. Like, I guess we could start going to the episode because this kind of like leads into like one of my major issues with it.
Are we both in the camp of this was our least favorite of all of them?
Yeah.
I just wanted to make sure. Yeah, so let's go ahead and kick into it here. So we start off with Gail on Synax. What'd you think? It was really took up like the first third of the episode, honestly, like 20 minutes.
Yeah, like I just felt like it wasn't, they could have done it so much quicker and they could have made it more condensed just because there's so many different things that they're like trying to touch upon. And it went too far out. And there's just certain things that I didn't like that they were trying to build there, like the world building for that city, the religion and all that. It just didn't work for me. I thought it was forced, that they were trying too hard, and they just kind of had to shoehorn it in to give Gail a reason why she would want to leave.
Yeah, it's the thing is I liked, so I did like them going back to Synax and them showing that aspect of her kind of solving the Abraxas equation and kind of fleshing out her life there a little more.
Yeah.
The problem with it is that it's funny for a planet covered in water, the world building to me felt kind of shallow. Like it was like whenever you're like portraying a planet in the sci-fi world or any kind of fantasy world or whatever, and you're doing world building, one thing I don't like is when the planet feels monolithic. Like, it seems like everyone on the planet kind of thinks and is the same kind of person. There's not a lot of diversity as far as like different schools of thought and stuff. It's like it portrayed Synex kind of like this monolithic world where they're all just religious zealots that are hunting heretics, and there's not different factions of people on Synex doing other things, and it didn't kind of hint at a bigger world than we got. It felt like it was just that village.
And some of the notes I made about Synex is like, it felt like it was the medieval period where religion overruled science, because you have her professor who was like, I used to teach, like, it's like, oh, we have a disturbance at the university, and you're like, oh, there's a university, okay, let's see what it's at. And you get there, you're kind of like, oh, this is it. Gil finds the guy in like 2 seconds, and then all the other people that were with her took forever to find her. It's like, oh, there's like 5 rooms, let's each check the rooms like for 10 minutes straight. Gil goes by herself, and us two would just go to the opposite side.
It felt kind of like convenient for the plot. And also it's like you know you meet this character, and they briefly kind of touch on that he used to like, he has a relationship with their parents from way back, and he's kind of like an old family friend is what they were kind of making him out to be. And the issue I had with that is like, this is like an emotional thing for Gale. And I think it's probably one of my bigger critiques about the show as a whole is there wasn't any investment in this character up until that point. So it felt like, we're just introduced to this guy, and we're supposed to kind of feel that loss for Gale, and we're supposed to feel that. And, you know, and Lulu Bell in the performance is doing a lot of the heavy lifting, because we weren't, it's not like this was alluded to in earlier episodes. It was just something kind of just presented to us, and then we have to kind of feel that. She kind of finds him. They essentially are hunting heretics, kind of reminiscent of the Inquisition.
That's why I put medieval period, religion overrules science, Spain, Italy, Inquisition.
Yeah. So that's definitely kind of the reference there. She is, so in the scene, he's trying to kind of persuade her to his side, or at least kind of let her see the light. Also, they set up that she's an acolyte for the seer, or she was an acolyte for the seer religion, and they were kind of showing that part of her life. So she was very much part of that world with the prayer stones. And
is it seer or sleeper?
I think the religion, they call them the seers, and then the god is called the sleeper.
Because like I saw that, because like her, because going back with like the her father and the family friend, it's, she tells him, hey, your plants is gonna die, because it's foretold, like you guys are SOL, you guys need to move. And he says, oh, did the sleeper tell you that, or did your math tell you? And she's like, the math, well, I don't believe it, because it came from math. And it just seemed like very like, if God doesn't say it, or if like it's not religious based, if the preacher doesn't say it, it's not true. And I don't know if that felt like a dig to like what's going on in society today with the vaccines and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. We're like, hey, here's all these warnings, and you're not reading into it because religion tells you not to read into it. So it's unique. It's like, it's a really unique take on, and that's what one of the takeaways I got from there, where it's, because I know we talked about religion playing a major role in the downfall of the empire, and this could be, I think that this helps support that argument, that even on the smaller, lesser important planets, religion still overrules empire, still overrules thought and reason and stuff like that.
And I'm definitely, there's another point too, kind of later in the Synax storyline that I found really interesting regarding that, as far as her faith is concerned. But, I completely agree as far as, the whole thing, I don't know, it kind of felt clunky, and it was frustrating, because I was like, because I don't know, I guess I can go into my other point, which is Synax looked gorgeous. Like,
oh yeah,
the visuals in this episode were great, as far as like, I thought Synax at night with the planets in the background and kind of the lighting was like amazing. Even some of the design of the village was like really great, and I thought the visuals were like, this was it's funny, because this is probably my least favorite episode, but this was one of the best looking ones. I feel like there was a lot of like really beautiful like imagery and stuff in this as well. But
oh yeah, like the Sunken Library looked, or Sunken University looked beautiful. Like it was beautifully done.
Yeah.
The tables, like when they're in her house and you see like everything there, it was very beautifully presented. It was a very beautiful episode. I really love the details, the design. It's just the story, like what we got there in the on Synax just felt kind of like eh, because like some of the other notes I had for this was like Gale was almost like Isaac Newton, where she teaches herself math and physics, and it's kind of like how came out of nowhere and just is a math genius, and it just felt like that.
Yeah, no, that's a good point too. That's something that I was thinking as well, which is there's no kind of and you know, this is part of the reason, you know, it's such a tall order for these writers for this series, is they have this feeling that they want to show how big the scale is, but they want to keep it very human and very narrow and kind of telling the human story of it. And what makes that hard is you move so quickly that you can't like, we can't empathize with the characters because the plot is moving so fast. It's hard to kind of like latch onto a specific character. Yeah. So when Gale just kind of like out of nowhere is able to kind of read these parchment papers and then figure out the Abraxas conjecture, you're like, yeah, wait, that's like 0 to 100 really fast. Like she just kind of finds these things, and then all of a sudden she's it just comes to her so naturally. And there is precedent in the real world for kind of prodigious like math geniuses and stuff like that, but it just didn't feel like that was developed. It just kind of, it was like, oh yeah, well, just, you know, she found it and now she knows. Now she's the best mathematician in the world, and it's, I don't know.
Yeah, it felt forced. And then my last note on this episode, this mm-hmm. part of the episode on Synax, is for a religion and planet that hates technology so much, they're well versed in communications and keeping up to date with the Empire and what's going on with the rest of the world.
Yeah, the one thing I'll push back on that on a little bit is because what I saw that as is kind of like, they are dialed into technology as much as they need to be to like really receive aid. So like if they're part of the Imperial, I kind of see it like in third world countries where they, you know, they receive aid from some of the first world countries and stuff like that. Yeah. You have to be dialed into an extent to potentially get that. And they are part of the Imperial, I guess, scope. They're not like outliers or anything like that. So I think it would make sense that they would have some kind of thing where they can maintain communication with it. But yeah, it's as for the stuff on Synax, the other thing that I found really interesting. So they have some stuff with her parents where it's kind of very, very one dimensional in their kind of hate for anything not Synax or anything not Seer related. The parents felt very one note to me. They didn't feel like they had much depth to them.
Yeah, they didn't feel like there's any warmth, especially like when they execute the professor, and the only one that showed like empathy and remorse and pain was Gale, but everybody else was like, down with the heretic.
Yeah.
Nothing. They just didn't care. Like, oh, let's go with it. And it felt like, okay, we could see the huge slant that it is pushing religion over science, but like how quickly did this happen? Like how, because you're saying that it, like how you're saying like 0 to 100 with Gale learning the history, the
Abraxas conjecture and
math, yeah, the Abraxas conjecture and math, and then all of a sudden her parents being best friend with this guy and then wanting to see him die. It's like that's really, really quick. And it was only because he believed in science and you guys believed in religion. It's kind of hard to see that and believe it.
Yeah, it's it kind of presents a dying world where like it's on the Synax is kind of on its last leg, so it's the fanaticism and stuff is just on another level than it would usually be from what I'm gaining from that. The other thing I did find interesting about this, so she goes to some guys that are kind of less than savory characters and asks them to send a tight beam to Trantor because she wants to enter the math competition for the Abraxas conjecture because she feels like she's past it.
How did she find out about that? If they ban like science and religion or science and math and stuff, like how did she find out about this competition?
Yeah, that's another thing too, is I didn't know where the news of this would have come from or where she would have found out about this stuff. I thought the same thing initially too, but she sends a type beam to Harry's university. Yeah. It turns out she wins the competition, so he sends back a message to her that she gets from them, and then there's this beautiful shot of her like taking the boat out in Synax and among these marshes or whatever to read the message. Yeah. And it's pretty much Harry just congratulating her on solving the Abraxas equation and about how people can't believe that a girl from Synax could do such a thing, and essentially just singing her praises and finally giving her some validation for her intellect, I guess.
That was one of my favorite parts of the episode, that scene.
Yeah, mine too. But the thing I found extremely interesting about that scene is after she gets the message and he thanks her, she thanks the sleeper. So she obviously still has some kind of reverence for the religion. It's not like she's like 100% atheist. So I found that really interesting because I felt like she's kind of torn between two worlds, and I think that's what her character kind of represents is this wrestle between faith and science.
And you kind of see that a little bit like when they do the flashbacks, because I think we could transition to the next part of the episode, which is when Gail gets recovered by the ship.
Mm-hmm.
You see some of the flashbacks of when she had the dots removed, because I know they made it a key point to show when they put into a kid that was recently born, and then you see her having them taken off. So it was really interesting seeing the two sides of the equation on that one.
Absolutely. And I think what she represents, at least coming after that scene, I think for me she represents kind of the agnostic person, the person that maybe doesn't know, so he doesn't believe. And it kind of makes sense that she would still have a foot kind of in the world of faith, because she has these inexplicable intuitions that I'm sure she thinks
are a good sign of it.
Exactly. And I'm sure she thinks she doesn't understand how she has these crazy intuitions, right? So God kind of fills, or in the real world too, faith kind of fills those gaps of knowledge that we don't have yet. So
yeah,
it makes sense that she's kind of torn between two worlds. But for some reason, it didn't click with me that she was that way. Even though on the first couple episodes, she did ask to go to the Seer Temple, like right when she got to Trantor. So she's kind of got a foot in both worlds. So I found that interesting that she thanked the Seer after, even though she was planning on leaving and really didn't believe that there was any kind of hope for the Synax at that point.
Yeah.
So she tells her parents, I think they explained that she takes the prayer stones out, well, at least what I got from it. I don't know if you did too, but the prayer stones were taking out to kind of force her parents' hand. You have to let me go to Trantor, or else they're going to kill me. Because I guess if you remove the prayer stones, I don't know if that's something, I would assume that that's something like you're a blasphemer and they would kill you, you know?
Yeah.
So it took it as like her forcing her parents' hand and saying like, look, I've removed my prayer stones. There's nothing you can do about it now. You're going to have to let me go to Trantor, you know? Is that what you got from it as well?
No, I got it more that she was giving up a part of her life because she always had the scars of who she used to be.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's more of a transitioning where she's transitioned from one aspect of her life where she believed everything that the sleeper would say to now transitioning to everything that math and science will say. So I think the scars are just her former life. So I just see it more as a transition more than anything else.
Yeah, and it definitely was. I think they had to have a reason, because there's no way, I feel like under normal circumstances, her dad would let her go, especially after that last conversation with him, that her dad would like let her go to Trantor, unless the alternative was like, I'm going to die if I stay here, you know?
Yeah, because I know she mentions that in the first episode. And the one thing I've noticed about the series, especially with the director Alex Graves, because there's another thing that gets called back to in the third part or the third act, which was mentioned earlier. So he's of the ilk that if it's on screen, it has a purpose.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So we'll talk about that when they go back to on the third act.
Yeah. So we initially, so we go from Synax, we transition. This is like Synax was like a third of the episode, just kind of fleshing that out. I wish we would have enjoyed that third kind of more, but it cuts right to her in her pod, right? She's floating. She's in her stasis pod, and there's a ship there. So she goes into the ship. She gets out, and she's like no one there. So
The Raven.
Is that what the name of the ship is?
Yep, Raven.
Okay. Yeah, so she gets out, and she goes to the door, and there's no one there. she gets the knife, kind of frantically trying to pry the door open, and the knife like is a key that opens the door, kind of activates the ship. Is that what you got too?
A little bit, yeah. The ship was kind of weird just because there's a little things like, I don't know. Like the ship just felt weird to me. Like
do you think like there's more to the ship than we don't know, and that,
yeah, kind of
like there's more mystery to it?
I think there is more mystery because there's things that get mentioned the longer she's on the ship. And one of the things that it just so happens to be convenient, like when she tries to kill herself, the ship auto corrects its course and she does like this matrix anti-suicide flip to stop it all. That's way too convenient. That's way too like, there's something up, like,
yeah,
somebody. And you kind of start thinking like, okay, how much of this is predicted? Because now you start thinking it's been 34 years and 200 plus days.
Mm-hmm.
It gets picked up. It's a completely empty ship. What's happening at the same time? And you start like thinking about it, like, this is way too convenient. This is way too.
Yeah. So, we'll get to that in a second here. So she opens the knife, or she uses the knife. The knife like magnetizes into the door and kind of activates the ship. She goes down this hallway, which I think was a really cool shot with the, she's walking through the hallway and there's those lights going. I remember I was like, this is a sci-fi moment. I really like this part.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. So she's walking through and she gets to a computer. It turns out the ship is only authorized to be used by Raish Foss, which it seems like she's put a big wrench in the plans of Harry and Raish, because this whole thing, it looks, seemed like Raish was supposed to kill Harry, or Raish's plan was that he was going to kill Harry and then go to this ship after stasis for 34 years.
Yeah.
And it turns out that now it's Gale. And obviously things have changed from the plan. What it looks like here. So she's trying to activate the computer. It's not activating because she is not authorized to use it. She starts to look up, but she does have access to like internet and public records and stuff.
Yep.
So again, like you mentioned, she did find out that she's been in cryostasis for 34 years and 200 something days, which is something that I was thinking at the end of the last episode. I was like, we don't know where Gale's going, and we also don't know how long she's been there. So turns out it's been 34 years and 200 days she's been floating around. She pulls up some information from the web about Harry's death. And what did you think about the whole sequence where she's like getting stuff from the internet and kind of watching exposition on the computer?
I wish it was a little bit more voyeuristic, a little bit more in detail. Like Raish, when he confesses to it, it felt kind of, it was like a bad angle. It just felt off. Like I thought it would be like more voyeuristic, more like, please confess your crimes, like kind of like face to face, like how we are.
Yeah.
But it was interesting that they used that to look back on, but it makes you wonder, how is this ship floating in space for so many years with all this information and nobody's noticed it yet? Nobody's gone like, hey, there's a ship, we're missing a ship. So it goes back to, it's way too convenient. I wonder if it was preloaded, like, hey, get this information from this date and time and that stuff to build upon
to kind of point Gale in the right direction. So like, you think like kind of the videos were predetermined to show in that way to kind of, because that's what she needed to see or something.
Yeah. It felt like it was kind of forced because the ship, she's trying to figure out where the ship's going, and all of a sudden she knows how to read navigation charts and how to pinpoint like where everything's at. So that was kind of one of those like, all right, whatever, we'll just go with it.
Yeah, it was weird. I think I'll save this part to talk about at the end, because that's kind of one of my critiques about it, was kind of how it ends and kind of in relation to this part as well too. But so she looks up some stuff about Harry's death and his funeral, which I want to make a point to. They specifically say a casket he designed himself. Yes. And I immediately was like, oh wow, that's right on the nose.
That's fucking metal.
Yeah. I was like, that's right on the nose. So they obviously, something is up with Harry's casket and body. Like, I don't know why you would add that information in unless, to me, either his casket is going to be used for something, or there's something is not finished with his body at all. It's going to be floating out there. So it raised another question that they were so specific about adding that in. it's actually what I thought Gale was looking for at the end. I thought she was going to be looking for his casket floating out there or something when she was looking for stuff. But I thought that was funny that they very blatantly say that. And then, so they see his execution. It's sad. The Foundation has no idea why Raish did what he did. He kind of kept stayed tight-lipped about the whole thing. Then she looks up Raish's execution and is very distraught. And he says to her, pretty much to her, that you can still solve a puzzle even if a piece is missing. So she's extremely distraught. And it kind of brings up another criticism of the episode that I had in previous episodes too, which is just for an overview, we've probably seen Raish's character on screen since the show started, maybe 5 minutes like of screen time, you would say.
Yeah, probably.
Probably like maybe ten minutes of screen time at the most.
Let's just say 10 minutes just to be safe.
We'll say 10.
Because there were also like those romantic scenes together. So those take up some time.
Right. So maybe 10 minutes of screen time of Raish since the show started. And then their relationship of that, we've probably seen 2 minutes, 3 minutes maybe of like their relationship, you know, potentially or something like that. So, so she sees that, she's visibly distraught, and then she decides to go kill herself with a scalpel. And I remember thinking like, I get that in the story she would be distraught because in her perspective, they spent a way more time with Raish than we did.
Yeah.
Her character did. I just remember thinking in that scene that she's doing that I feel like the show wanted us to have an emotional attachment to it. And I'm like, I can't feel the empathy that she's feeling for this because we spent so little time kind of with their relationship. It seemed like there wasn't a lot of investment in that. And then for her to make this crazy, out there decision to go like try to cut her wrist in the shower with a scalpel. I remember thinking like it didn't feel earned to me. I don't know if you felt the same way.
No, I didn't. It like a lot of it just felt rushed, like felt forced. I know I mentioned it on Synax. Is it Synax?
Synax, yeah.
Yeah, Synax. Mm-hmm. That whole episode felt like that portion felt very forced. And I think, and I want to say that hopefully this was because of time constraint and episode limits and budget, but it just felt like there was more to this episode or more to that got left out on the cutting room floor. Just because some of the jumps make no sense whatsoever. Some of the leaps, some of the how do they get there moments makes you, forces you to suspend belief and go like, okay, I have to believe it because I want to still be invested. And this was one of them, was like she's been with a guy for maybe let's say 4, 6 months, 8 months, and finds out that all these things, and then all of a sudden wants to off herself.
The thing is, I think the problem I had with it is not that she would feel that way and maybe she would in a moment of weakness want to commit suicide, maybe that happens, it's that they show it to us as an audience like we're supposed to kind of buy into that too.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They kind of present it like we're supposed to be feeling as heartbroken as she is in that moment. And there's no way for us to have done that because there wasn't enough investment in those characters. And like I said, it's such a tough balancing act because obviously the reason they say Foundation was unfilmable or unadaptable is because it's so broad and it's so big and it moves so quickly. And I think we're kind of seeing some of the problems that presents where it's like, it's really hard to tell a human story and for you to empathize with characters when things are moving so quickly. These felt like moments that they wanted us to be heartbroken about. And it's just like, I just couldn't get there as a viewer because I hadn't seen enough. I really didn't know much about Raish at all, you know?
Yeah. It's like when they left Trantor, is it Trantor? Yeah. Trantor to go to Terminex. All of a sudden you don't really have a grasp of time and they're in a relationship and you're like,
right.
Okay. I can see like Molly hooking up within a few days or like a week or two, but like, this is like hot and heavy to the point where they're going
in. Yeah. They're soulmates in love.
This is where we want to retire on this beautiful planet.
It's
how'd you guys get there?
Yeah. Yeah. And we didn't see the in between.
And I think that's what happens a lot in this episode, because first act, you get that. Second act, you get that. And third act, I actually made a note for the third act. So when we get there, it helps us explain, but like the ship episode just didn't feel like the suicide. And then all of a sudden it's like, well, I'm going to go outside to see where I'm at because now I have determination. because you self-corrected and saved me with my Matrix ass flip in the shower, even though they've been on ships a ton of times, and this is the first time we've seen a ship move of that size and still flip the person. It's like, okay, that
I had issues. I definitely had issues with that as well. So when she's doing the or she's in there in a moment of weakness trying to cut her wrist, and then all of a sudden the ship kind of does a course correction and she flips, which it seems that seemed odd to me too, because I'm like, does that happen on ships? Is that a thing that in this world where if a ship changes direction, you just like you could fly? And like, I feel like they would have figured out kind of a solution for that. So that kind of brings up your point too, where I wonder if the ship knew what she was doing and that the ship kind of stopped it. If it's something like Harry, like, because who knows, the ship looks super high tech and stuff like that. So I'm wondering if like this ship is more of a character than we're letting on, and the ship maybe knew that she was about to do something that wasn't part of the plan and kind of corrected that way.
Yeah, so there's too many questions on the ship, so hopefully the next episode kind of helps explain it.
Right.
I'm ready to talk about Act 3.
Yeah, so we go immediately to Terminus, where Salvor and the troops are all kind of waiting at the wall as the Anacreans have swarmed the city. They're all surrounded, and we cut to them, and then the Cleon, general of the Imperial Army or something.
Yeah,
he's brought a ship from the jump drive. So there's a jump drive there, and. Yeah, so what were your overall thoughts on the Act 3 and kind of where everything went? This is the first time we get a really big dose of action in the show, which I think people will kind of like, that aspect of it. But what were your thoughts on it?
My main takeaways were this. The Arrakians or...
Anacreans.
Anacreans. It takes me a while to get used to the Anacreans. Yeah. They cheered for the Empire ship. Why? Like, why would they cheer for the Empire ship? Like, that seemed kind of weird. And that goes back to a couple of stuff of like, the buoy gets knocked off. A lot of things had to happen that were out of protocol for that ship to get there.
Mm-hmm.
How did they know all their actions were going to get the ship to get there? Like, they planned for that ship to be there. But as we saw in the previous episode, if none of that stuff happened with Brother Day and Brother Dusk, there would be no ship. So it's like, how were they able to plan so far ahead without actually knowing that was going to work?
Possibly. I understood that aspect as like, I think a ship was going to come eventually because the comm buoy was offline. And once they were going to send a scout team out to figure out why, because it probably costs a lot of money. It's kind of one of those things where if something that kind of big and expensive and useful in the Outer Reach goes offline, you're going to send someone to figure out how to fix it. So I think that was the assumption. I'm assuming they cheered. The assumption I got was that they wanted a ship with a jump drive to come because they want the jump drive. That was my assumption. And I was like after last episode, I was thinking, okay, this is kind of part of their plan. They're going to they sent a comm buoy offline. She said she did it on purpose, and that an Imperial skip would come scouting. And then they were planning on, my assumption was they actually were looking for the nav module, and that they're planning on getting a jump drive from the ship so that they have a nav module in the jump drive and they can go somewhere without fast speed, right? They were planning on commandeering that scout ship essentially. But that kind of fell out the window like later in the episode, because it gets like completely obliterated, which we'll get to. But that was my feeling. Is that's what when I saw that they cheered, I figured that their whole plan was Imperial ship's gonna come, and that we're going to. That's all part of our plan that we have in place.
Yeah. So that was one of my takeaways. My other one was Lewis is an asshole.
Yeah.
And the last one was day to night. How? Like legit.
Possible
time. Yeah.
Yes. I didn't even catch that, but it seems like no time passed.
No time passed, and we'll start at the beginning.
Because
I do want to, because that's, to me, that was like, this episode was, there's no time. Like, they never had a reference of time. They never gave you a chance to connect to the characters, connect to the situations, connect, and it just was like, okay, we got to rush through all this stuff.
Yeah.
Suspend belief. Let's go.
Yeah, so they start, the Imperial Commander hails Lewis, the asshole you talked about.
Yeah.
Hails Lewis and says, hey, who's in charge? And he doesn't know anything, so Salvor's kind of just on the line, I guess, and she says, I know what's going on with the Anacreans, so she's kind of giving him information. And she immediately says, and this was one of my issues too, was the Imperial Commander. It seemed like they just made really terrible moves. But yeah. She immediately says, hey, they took the Kambui offline and expected an Imperial response. I would keep my distance because she says that, like, that's the first thing she says to them.
Yep.
And they go, heard from who? And she says, the Grand Huntress of Anacreon. And then he says, well, bring her to my quarters or bring her to my ship, which I guess
take her to the tower.
Is the tower like a launch point for like shuttles or something? Is that what?
I think so. Yeah.
So they were like, take her to the tower because that's where she's going to launch and he can take her up to the Imperial ship, I'm assuming is what the.
Yeah.
They didn't communicate that well, but I'm assuming that's what they were trying to do.
Yeah. They said, take her to the tower and it just felt, and then she goes like, don't, that's a bad idea. Don't do it. And then,
but they jammed the thing.
Yeah, they jammed the thing, and you're thinking, if they all of a sudden cut out and they're saying not to do it, something's not right. Something's off.
Yeah. Well, even if he didn't hear that, I feel like that first part clues you into like, oh, hey, this wasn't an unexpected thing. The Anacreans knew that we were going to come, so maybe we should be a little more cautious about our approach here. That seems like it would make a lot of sense to me. So they're taking Farrakeen to the tower. They take her to the tower. All of a sudden, Salvor gets she realizes that this seems like it's planned, right? So she runs away to go back to the tower as well. And then
she's because that's how they can knock out the force fields.
Right. And then Farrakeen is walking in the tower. All of a sudden she stops and starts like fidgeting with her eye and like pulls, I guess, an EMP bomb or something out of her eyeball. And then throws it and destroys the tower, therefore destroying the entire barrier that protects Terminus. And that's when all kind of hell breaks loose.
Yep.
And like you were saying that I didn't really catch it, but now that you mentioned it, it's like, yeah, it's daytime then. And then really like in a flash, because he says, I want her in my ship in 10 minutes, he says. So it's not like, it doesn't seem like hours have passed that they've been taking Farrakeen to this tower to put her on a shuttle to take her up. It was like 10 minutes and all of a sudden it's like dark outside.
Yeah. And then like, they weren't like the, I have a hard time saying their names. The Anakins,
Anacreans.
Anacreans. They weren't far away from the city. Like some of them were at the city gate. Like some of them were like almost at the city force field. And then all of a sudden you see them charging and it's nighttime. You're going like, the tower goes down at daytime. Yeah. Now it's nighttime and you're invading at dusk. Like this, it's too much of a time jump. Like, come on.
Yeah.
Guys.
The timing felt weird, but, and just that aside, it was like, so the EMP device blows up, the force field goes down.
Yeah.
Our characters, Abbas, her father is out there. The manservant you talked about, whatever, Hugo is out there. You got the one girl character, I forget her name too, but she's out there as well.
Yeah.
And then the kids that we were introduced to are all out there. And I get the feeling that we're being shown a really heavy dose of plot armor because I don't think any of them are going to have, like, any of them are going to, like, despite the carnage and the massacre that they show later in the episode where it just looks like Anacreans are killing everything that's walking, I don't feel like any of those characters are gonna be hurt or killed at all. They weren't in this episode. So it made me kind of go like, I don't know, it made me kind of like frustrated that they were all there on the front lines and I feel like, it doesn't seem like they're going to have a... Maybe I'm wrong. Yeah. Maybe in the next episode, Abbas or Hugo or somebody is killed in the fight and it really adds stakes to the battle or whatever, but it didn't feel like they were going in that direction.
No, it doesn't look like the plot armor is shown with these characters.
Yeah. Even the mother character is held at gunpoint and then just kind of like goes down and
with the most cryptic duck and cover or duck and roll. It's like,
right,
you're telling me to duck and roll. I'm like, I didn't even get duck and roll. I was like, what is she telling her to do? It's like, it's a secret, like, I love you. This is like her special moment. No, it's the duck and cover.
And again, it's like, if that was a thread that they had weaved in like the first two episodes or something along those episodes where like the mother had said something to her, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's like they set it up and pay it off within 2 seconds of each other. And it's like, it felt like that to me too, where that she explains, oh, you told me to duck and cover cryptically. And that's what I did. Cause yeah. When I was a kid, I was, you know, I ducked and crawled or something. It felt kind of like they set it up immediately and then pay it off immediately. And that always comes off cheap, feels cheap to me, you know?
Yeah. And one of the things also, because like in this episode, we found out like Farrah, the reason why she's getting her revenge is her main thing was to destroy Foundation because she blames the Anakin and...
She blames like Harry's blasphemy for causing all of this.
Yeah, like it was his cause. And that leads back into one of the themes of the show is religion versus science, or religion versus... So that was a really interesting take, that they were like, no, we're taking our frustration of the Empire out on Foundation that will save mankind.
Yeah.
Oh, the foreshadow. So in the previous episode, I think it was The Mathematician's Ghost, they argue over the sundial and the water dial to tell the time. And this is where I say Alex Graves always has, if he features something, it's because it has a purpose. Salvor used that to fight off Farrah to prevent her from getting killed.
Yeah.
So it was really interesting that they're like, okay, the sundial actually had a purpose.
I like that touch. I did like that touch of the sundial being used as a weapon later on. I felt like that was set up. That was an example of something that we saw earlier.
And
you know, had they just explained the sundial versus water thing like earlier in that scene and then did it wouldn't have felt as good, right? It's the fact that you saw this episode where it's like they're explaining that like two episodes ago, and then it's like, oh cool, this is like a thing that I saw coming back.
It had a purpose, and you could have easily, like when the little kids were playing with the vault, there could have been that scene where Salvor was like crawling or whatever it was, that could have added more passion, empathy, more power to that scene. Like, remember when we were little and you said, and you told me to do this, this, and this, do that right now. And she ducks and it's like,
right. Okay, it would have felt more intentional, you know, more, we would have bought into it more. And I feel like we're both kind of just kind of bashing on the episode. I thought it looked great.
Yeah.
I did like that they introduced action, and it seems like things are moving. Things are moving at a quicker, not a quicker pace, because I mean it's moving so fast. But
yeah, this really
felt like things are escalating, and we're getting to a new normal as far as like where the world's gonna go from here. I felt, I guess, consequential would be the word I would put. This episode felt very consequential.
I think what it is, like the reason why this might not have been one of our favorite episodes, because like me and you both said, we took notes, and I think it just didn't grip us as well as the previous two episodes.
Yeah.
Because me and you both agree that 3 and 4 are our favorites. Yours is 3, mine is 4. And this episode, I think we had a lot of hype for it, and we're like thinking, okay, we're gonna see what happened with Gale. We're gonna see how this all plays in. We're gonna see the time. We're gonna see how long it's been. And when they played it all out, it was kind of like, it didn't feel like 34 years. It didn't feel like hours have passed when they stormed the Capitol. It just felt like they told a story and they just didn't give us any reasons why we should be invested in the story. It was a well thought out story, just wasn't this wasn't for us.
I think some of the issues is that this one didn't feel well thought out to me. This one felt kind of like I said, shallow. It felt kind of like it wasn't as complex, or some of the world building in the earlier episodes felt like they were hinting at a much bigger world. And in this one, it felt very self-contained. Like it felt like the people writing the episode weren't kind of pulling in resources from other episodes. It was very much like a self-contained thing. We have to tell this story and exposit this story completely in this 60 minutes, you know?
Yeah.
But I did want to mention another thing that I had, another issue I had with it essentially, was Farrah Keen and Salvor Hardin's fight. I felt like it was crazy over edited. And I remember as I was watching it going like, as visually beautiful as this entire series has been, that fight scene was like in a blue black corridor and it was dark, and I was like, I can't follow anything that's happening.
Yeah, they're wearing dark color clothing, and
right,
that was probably, I hated that fight scene. I thought that fight scene was god awful. It was so one-sided, yeah, that it is like all of a sudden Farrakeen pulls like out of her face, is kicking ass as if she like, right, she's been training for this her entire life, and you're thinking she's doing this in handcuffs.
Yeah,
he's kicking it. Yeah,
yeah. My issues with, I mean, I felt that way somewhat too. My issues with it were just, I was sitting there going like, what are the choices? Like, they could have put this next to like a big window with like a, you know what I mean? They could have made this really visually appealing, and also I worry about like whether they had issues doing those stunts because the editing was so cut up. Like, yeah, there were no wide shots of anything. I felt like they were doing like 15 shots every second, and yeah, it was just cutting back and forth. And I remember thinking like it felt overwhelming and kind of disorienting. And then I was just like, this is so visually flat compared to like, yeah, how beautiful everything else is in the show. This consequential fight where you see these two like heroines that you've been building up for two episodes finally, yeah, go at it. And I remember thinking like, this is such a bland like looking scene. I just remember I was really like taken aback at how uninteresting visually it was. It was just neutral tones and really over edited.
Yeah, and there's just like, yeah, like there was during the fight scene, I don't know if you remember this, they go by a window and it kind of shine some light through that was a very good contrast, and that was it, and that was maybe all for like a few seconds.
Yeah, it was weird. It felt like a very uninspired fight scene to me, but
yeah.
So yeah, Salvor wins, but then they have her mom, like the cavalry, it shows up.
Yeah,
and then you see that the Imperial ship, despite the warnings, yeah, the
Aegis,
yeah, the Aegis ship, despite the warnings from Salvor, goes, I'm gonna go down and on a loudspeaker just say, hey guys, cut it out, you know.
Yeah,
you guys need to chill out, like cut it out guys. I one thing I'll say too is that I love the design of their ship. I think, yes, the design of their ship is so cool, man.
I know, it looked exactly like a Boba Fett's ship.
Yeah, it does look similar to Boba Fett's and the kind of verticality of it and stuff as well, but I thought it looked cool when it came out of the jump space or whatever. I thought that scene was cool when it's going, yeah, down.
When it entered the atmosphere, it was a really, the design was good. The color contrast compared to the bleak landscape,
yeah,
was really good. I really enjoyed that because I was like, finally, color.
But it was an odd choice. Like, they show them on the ship and he gives this like pre-war speech where he's like, the Anakrians caused the Star Bridge to fall. It's personal for some of you, which means it's personal, yeah, for all of us. And I'm going, oh, it's about to get real.
We're about to see
Anakrian versus Imperial forces go at it. And like, there's going to be a crazy like firefight, you know? And then they go down and they loudspeaker like, hey guys, you need to cut it out or we're going to get you. And then the Anakrian, she just goes, go ahead and shoot. And he shoots and then the ship blows up. And I just, yeah, remember thinking like, it seems like, why show the war speech?
Yeah, why? And
for it was warship, weird, right? Yeah, it seemed like, what's the point of the big war speech getting everyone hyped up if the ship's just gonna fall and explode? It seemed like they were setting up something that, I don't know.
Yeah,
it felt odd to me.
Yeah, and it went down too easy. Like, it went down way too easy.
Like one shot, yeah, from that floor.
And it's a warship too. It wasn't like a Mickey Mouse thing.
Yeah. Like, and it feels like they were scanning. They initially go in the atmosphere and they were scanning and they said there's corvettes out. There's these Anakrian corvettes out here. It feels like they would be scanning for artillery, right? Like ground, yeah, troops and artillery too. They would kind of know if there was something there. I don't know. It just kind of, like you said, a lot of it just felt convenient for the plot.
And they're like, oh yeah, they camouflage it because Salvor does tell Hugo like, oh yeah, they're why are they camouflaging the flak cannon? That makes no sense.
Oh, okay. So it's camouflage on the ground. Yeah.
Yeah. So they said it's camouflage, but you're like, is it, yeah, really? Is it? Is it? No.
Yeah. It's So I'm trying to think if anything consequence happened. She explains. So she's holding Salvor and kind of making her look upon the horror that Terminus is just getting completely wrecked.
Yeah.
And she explains that, it, like you said, it's because of Harry's hubris and his blasphemy that caused them to do this in the first place. That's kind of her thing. And then again, with the feeling that there's a thick level of plot armor here, she says, the guy behind her says, we should kill her and go. And I remember thinking, yeah, why not? And then she goes, and then she says, no, we need to stick to the plan. She won't talk, and then just kind of knock her out. So hopefully they explain in the next episode why it is that she didn't kill her. And hopefully it's not something as kind of vapid as just mutual respect or something, you know?
Yeah.
Cause just it like, seems, oh, we want, I don't know. I hope that there's a plot reason for why they didn't just kill Salvor Hardin, knowing, especially because Farrakeen knows what she's capable of. So it's like, why wouldn't you get a threat like that off the board if you had the opportunity? She knows that she can pretty much read minds and tell the universe. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
So hopefully there's a plot reason for that. But there anything that happened after that? Oh, yeah. The ending part. Did you want to get to that? Or did you have anything else about the Terminus stuff?
It stunk. It could have been better.
So you're talking about Harry, right? The Harry part?
Yes.
Okay. So yeah, we go back to the ship. She, first of all, Gail puts on a spacesuit and goes out because she can't get a visual confirmation of the place that she
Ship won't show her what it is.
Right, right. And then before that, I don't know if we talked about it too, but she essentially had like a beautiful mind moment where she's just kind of figuring out through mathematics where she is.
Yeah, we talked about that a little bit. I referenced it, like all of a sudden she could read like navigation maps as if it's nothing.
Yeah. So she kind of goes and uses her mathematics and her knowledge of ordinal analysis to figure out where they are in space, so she can kind of deduce what the plans are, what's supposed to be going on here. So she goes out to get a visual confirmation of the place she's supposed to be. She searches for infrared and she sees that it is the one habitable planet that is orbiting a dark star, which is why she can't see it, which they later allude to is, do you know the name of the planet? It's Harry's home planet.
Helicon. H-E-L-I-C-O-N. I wrote it down in my notes.
Nice. There you go. At least somebody's taking notes here. Awesome. But they say it's Helicon. It's Harry's homeworld. And Gail is like, we can't go there because they all think I killed Harry. And she's telling the ship to course correct. And the ship is not answering her. And we look on the floor and we see blood. And then it shows a hologram of Harry dying. And that's kind of where the episode ends. This is a pet peeve of mine specifically, but the first thing I want to talk about, because I have a couple things I want to say about this, but the first thing I want to talk about is, I don't know if you felt the same way, but I immediately was like, oh, it's Jor-El. Right? From if for those of you that might be unfamiliar, David Goyer wrote Man of Steel 2. Man of Steel 2, T-O-O. He wrote the script for Man of Steel that Zack Snyder directed. And in that script, a prominent figure dies in the first act, in the very first act of the movie. Sorry, spoiler alert for Man of Steel if you guys haven't seen it. But I'm not going to... a prominent figure dies in the very first act of that. And then later on, Superman finds a ship, and it's this... dilapidated ship that there's no one is at this ship, and he goes in and there's this consciousness of his father there, the Jor-El thing. And this did you sense that connection at all? Because I immediately thought of Jor-El, and then I said
I didn't think of Jor-El, and now that you said it, I'm like, crap, that's perfect. I just thought more of like, oh, look how convenient, a hologram to explain it all.
Yeah, and that's hopefully, I'm hoping he doesn't kind of become a plot device like you're saying, and kind of just used as an exposition machine for Gale. I'm hoping that's not the case, but they show him there, and so the one thing I'll say is I did see the immediate parallels to Man of Steel, where I was just like, this feels exactly the same to me. That's kind of what, what concerns me is when you're saying like Harry's going to be used as this thing that just explains everything to everybody. That's kind of what Jor-El did in Man of Steel to some extent. So I'm kind of worried that might be the case with this one too. But the other thing I'll say too is a pet peeve of mine in shows is if you're going to dramatically kill off a character, kill them off. And it's like, it's like it's gonna force your characters into a new emotional state. It's gonna force you to make really really hard decisions that way. And that kind of got my hopes up when I saw season or episode two of, oh wow, where are they gonna take this? Because it presents a challenge for the writers at that point to kind of take this in a new direction and stuff. So one of my pet peeves in shows is usually like if you're gonna impactfully kill a character and make it a big part of the show, you kind of have to take that chip off the board.
They need to stay dead. They can't.
Right. Because what it does is to me, it cheapens future interactions in the show, where it's like if Cleon is in a life or death situation, you don't get the same impact of like he might be gone. I might not see him again in the show, because you're like, oh, well, Harry died and then he came back like three episodes later in some form or another.
A show that did that really great. And I know it's getting a lot of flack just because it's been on for 10 seasons and it just needed to die like a long time ago. Was The Walking Dead. Like when someone died, they stayed dead. It wasn't, they died. We found a zombie cure. Let's bring them back. Yay. It was, they're dead.
Yeah. Well, and it immediately makes you value the stakes of the show so much more, because you are scared for the characters, because you're like, I want to keep seeing this person week to week. And if they die, I know the show's not going to give them back to me. And it's like, so it raises the stakes of the entire show. So
that was
concerning. I'm not going to write off and say that I'm like angry about it necessarily, because I don't know where they're going to go with it in the next episode yet. But when I saw it, I remember thinking like that was three episodes that we didn't have Harry.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel like a long time. I guess I'm cautiously optimistic about that, you know?
Yeah. And that also leads up to other stuff. Like, will they bring back Ra's? Like, let's say that Harry hologram does become Jor-El. Does Ra's now become Jor-El? Like,
right.
Because then you just kind of cheapen their deaths. You kind of cheapen their actions. Then you kind of go like, okay, why did Ra's have to kill Harry when they could have just faked it?
Yeah.
And call it a day. Like, why did they need to go through all this elaborate stuff when they could have easily just not done what they did?
Yeah. It's, I think we've been going for pretty close to an hour here. So what I want to do is real quickly to touch on some really quick points, which is the knife in the door. Do you think that, because they kept cutting back to show the knife with like three, and it looked like it wasn't like sinking correctly or something with the door.
Yeah.
I don't know if that means that the door is going to malfunction in the next episode, or if that is Harry's consciousness downloading to the ship, which is why she didn't see it initially, because it was like something with his DNA or his blood on the knife is like downloading something to the ship, where you're seeing his last moments or his last memories or something like that. That's what I think it might be. Or it could just be something where the ship door looks like it's going to malfunction, and that might be a plot point in the next episode. Did you catch anything with that?
With the knife, as we already know that Alex Grace is not going to be directing the next episode. It's Jennifer Fong.
Mm-hmm.
She's going to be directing the next episode. It would make sense, especially since we know that Alex Grace wasn't part of it, but Andrew Bernstein, the director of episode two, where they do kill off Harry. Why would Ra's throw the knife in with Gale if he's trying to hide it, or if he was trying to frame her? Like, why would he?
Yeah.
Because then he admits to the crime, so like the knife does have to play an important role.
Yeah.
Why preserve the blood? Why preserve that stuff? So there could be something where the blood is important, that the blood is necessary to activate something, to get something going. And this might be a little bit of a stretch, but I think this might have to do with the cloning that was happening with the Empire, with Cleon the First. And this could be Harry cloning himself, or getting a clone of himself, and Ra's was supposed to be the one that took care of him, bring him to Halcyon, so that way he could have the same upbringing that Harry had, and go from there.
Yeah, possibly the cloning could be something something that plays a role in this as well. The knife, him throwing the knife in, I think what felt obvious to me was that the knife was used to open the ship, so he knew she had to have the knife there in order to get in the ship to begin with, so he throws it in. But I was saying as well, I think the blood, I don't think the knife alone would have gotten him into the ship. I think what Harry did is he said, the ship that you're going to be going to is only going to open if it's got my blood on it, and it's this knife, which means it's his way of guaranteeing that Raish followed through with his plan of killing him. You know what I mean?
And something that was mentioned in this episode was like, we foreshadowed it that there was conflict between Raish and Harry where they like, they couldn't remember like key details of Raish's life. They made it seem like Harry was like, oh yeah, so absent-minded and so nonchalant and not cared about Raish at all. But you saw him like comfort Gale, like, hey, if you join me on this path, this is what to expect. And he showed empathy. So when they did the eulogy, it was a completely different perspective that we had between the relationship between Harry and Raish, that you see that as more of like a father and a son. Mm-hmm. That wasn't so one-dimensional how Raish was portrayed in episode 2.
Yeah. Yeah, so did you have any other little stuff about the episode at all? Or do you have any predictions about next episode?
That it's a cloning, because the name of the episode 6 is Death and the Maiden. Okay. So there has to be something that deals with death and something that has to deal with purity. So I'm thinking that it might be Harry being reborn. It might be Salvor Hardin being reborn. Like something has to do with purity with someone. Yeah. So
I think the next episode's going to deal pretty heavily in Cleon's story, because we didn't get any of him in this one. So I think it's going to go back to Cleon, who last we checked was on his way to that world for the girl, the Luminism prophet.
Yeah.
He was going to that conclave, I think is what they called it. And he's going to meet with her. So there should be some really good scenes there. We're going to get introduced to a new world. We're going to get introduced to a new religion. We're going to get introduced to some new characters. Cause that character, I forget the name, but he said Ifa or something like that.
Ifa, I think it was.
Yeah, like Ifa or something like that. He's going to introduce to her, which she should be an interesting character. I wonder if the Maiden is talking about Demerzel. It's possible that she might be the Maiden they're referring to in that as well. So I think it's going to focus heavily on that. I don't know if we're going to be in Terminus at all. It might just be all on that planet, which would be kind of cool. So we'll get to see a new world next episode, some new characters. Did you have anything else? That should wrap it up for us, huh?
We are good to go, sir. I read all my notes.
Oh, awesome.
And then, as they say, may the light never dim.
May the light never dim, and enjoy and respect the peace, everybody. Do you have anything coming up that you want to promo? Any articles or anything that you've written?
Wrote a couple of things. I really wish they did this for all Marvel TV shows. And with Foundation, I did the official Marvel WandaVision Marvel Handbook, released by Titan Comics. Really good deep dive on the characters, on the episode guides. If they did that with Loki, that would make the episodes 1,000 times better. If they do that with Foundation, that would be a great companion to our podcast, because then we could revisit it. We could do like recap episodes and see how far we were and how close we were to some of the plot points that they were coming up with as the episode continued. But that's all I got going on right now for me. What about yourself, good sir? What you got going on?
Awesome. Well, we just did launch the podcast and stuff, so you guys can get it in audio format, which is really exciting. If you guys want to listen to some Foundation nerding out on the way to work or working out or whatever, those are available on all the major podcasting platforms. We'll probably add some more later. It is going to go up on YouTube as well. I do have the watch party. We're going to be ending voting here tonight, and then Monday night we're most likely going to be watching 13 Ghosts. It seems like that's in the lead as of right now. So if you guys want to hang out and watch a fun horror movie here in October, you can do so Monday nights at 8 Eastern time. It's going to be on youtube.com/thedistract. And I just did a review for Lamb. That's up on the website, thedismedia.com, so you guys can check that out. That's pretty much it. I think I'm gonna go watch The Last Duel tonight. That's really all I have going on. But nice. I really appreciate you guys tuning in for this one, and Brian, you for hanging out.
Anytime,
and we will see you and talk to you guys next week, same time.
See y'all later.